you very much. I'm excited to be here today.
Can you guys hear me okay?
So as she mentioned, I'm going to talk about oral health and diet, particularly the perspectives of parents of young children from Latino families. I have nothing to disclose. And so Latino children suffer disproportionately from dental caries. They have higher prevalence and more severity and more untreated decay than many other groups. And we know that diet, including fermentable carbohydrate consumption, is a contributing factor to caries. And we know that parental and home behaviors around diet are complex and not well understood. We do know that Latino families often drink more soda than other populations, but this has been going down in recent years, so their soda consumption is similar to other groups, but their juice consumption is still higher. So here at the top of this slide is the caries balance that some of you familiar with dentistry might have seen before. On the left-hand side, we have factors that contribute to dental caries, and on the right-hand side, we have the protective factors that help protect against caries. And we see right here the feeding and eating practices, which is usually considered the frequency of consuming fermentable carbohydrates, is a contributing factor to dental caries. So we know this in the dental literature, but we know less about it in actual practice in terms of children's lives, in terms of how families work, and in terms of this context of community. And so that's what the question is that we looked at today. I wanted to see how low-income Latino parents, what their knowledge is, what their beliefs and behaviors are around their children's diet, and how they think that interacts with oral health. So to do this, I did qualitative interviews. So this is one-on-one, in-person interviews, usually in Spanish. And we also did 5 focus groups in Spanish with parents of children under age 5 years. About half of the interviews were done in an urban city, and the other half were done in a rural farm working community. And then we did 5 focus groups in that farm working community as well. And these interviews were audio recorded, and we translated and transcribed them. And then we used qualitative methods to code them and thematically analyze what everybody said. So the people that we ended up talking to, I'm going to briefly describe here. Most of them were mothers, over 90%, although once we realized that, we went out and got some fathers, too, to sort of see if there was a major difference there. But this is mainly, I'm going to be reporting what the mothers said. They were low income. They had an average of 7 years of schooling. This was slightly higher in the urban community, where people had more around 8 or 9 years of education. In the rural community, it was closer to 6. And most of these parents were foreign-born, and they had an average of 13 years living in the United States. So they'd actually been here for a while. And so these are some of the key things that came out of the interview data. First of all, parents knew that sugar was harmful to dental health. They strongly recognized candy and soda as being cariogenic, and some of the parents also recognized juice. But other things like sports drinks, juice for some of the parents, chips, cookies, flavored yogurts, these things were less recognized as being cariogenic, but these were things that people commonly consumed. One of the interesting things that came out of the data is that parents viewed some foods as beneficial or protective against caries. So this is something I'll talk about a little bit on the next slide as well. And everybody mentioned volume, not frequency, in terms of how it influenced oral health. So they talked about how much candy their children ate or how much juice their child drank, not necessarily thinking about when or how they consumed those candy or the drinks. And because they knew that sugar was harmful to dental health, parents usually were active in trying to reduce their children's consumption of candy and soda. But some of these less recognized things, they didn't make as much efforts to control. So I went ahead and constructed my own caries balance from what the parents said. This first version of it is what all the parents said, particularly about candy and soda. All of the parents mentioned that. And then some of the protective factors that a lot of parents mentioned were vitamins. Sometimes identifying fluoride supplements specifically, but usually just talking about vitamins generally. Milk, and then fruits and vegetables. So these are things that are sort of generally healthy to be consuming. And then some of the parents were much more specific and could list out lots of different things that they felt contributed to caries. This included things like cookies, juice, chocolate milk, fast food, like pizza, french fries, hamburgers. And so the one thing I wanted to add more detail about was this idea of milk being protective. So a lot of the parents talked about milk and how it's important to develop strong teeth, sometimes mentioning calcium, sometimes not. But they weren't necessarily focused on how the children are consuming milk. So if we think about milk in a baby bottle and milk in a sippy cup being consumed frequently over long periods of time, it could have not always a positive effect. And so I thought that was something that was interesting to think about. Parents always mention milk in a positive influence in terms of diet. So when they give their children milk in whatever form, they think it's beneficial for their oral health. Okay, one of the other things that parents talked about were their actual behavior. So I mentioned that they knew that sugar and soda were bad for their children's teeth and they tried to limit it. But children are their own beings, and they were very active in their own dietary behaviors. So I have a couple of quotes here illustrating how children can sort of counteract their parents' attempts to limit their sugar consumption. So as an interviewer, I asked, "Why do you think he got cavities?" And the parent responded, "Because he's been eating a lot of candies lately, and he won't listen." So the parent's noticing that the child is eating the candies and that they're not responding to the parent's recommendation that they don't eat so much. Another parent said, "She asks for candies. Sometimes we go to parties and she is given candies. I put them away, and before I know it, she has moved a chair so she can reach the candy and she is eating them." The other thing that came out is that many parents felt external influences, things like birthday parties and the quote I just mentioned, holidays like Halloween. Other family members and their schedules were factors that influenced their ability to control a child's access to candies and sugary foods. For example, a mother said, "If she didn't get it, the candy, from me, she would get it from grandma, the aunt, anybody that would have candy, would take care of her, would give it to her. So it was hard for me not to do it. It was hard for me to see who would give her what because I was working too." So the mother is feeling less of control because there's so many people involved in taking care of her child who all want to give her things that she wants. And one of the really big things that came across all of the interviews was changes in diets from people's home country. Most of the parents were foreign-born, mainly from Mexico, but also some other places in Central America. And one of the things they talked about in terms of what they feed their children and what their whole family eats, they definitely talked with nostalgia and just description about what they eat in Mexico, what they eat here, and how that has sort of changed with their moving to the United States. This included more processed foods and fewer fruits and vegetables, and also was influenced a lot by food availability, what's available in their neighborhood, and what they can reach quickly. The rural area there was not like any chain stores in that rural area. It was a full 45 minutes drive to like a chain grocery store. Their work schedules and also income and financial limitations. And so I have a few quotes about this theme as well. "We hardly ever ate chips back home in Mexico. Here the thing is that you have money, you can buy it. Back home, we didn't have any money, so we didn't buy that stuff. Sodas, we do drink sodas once in a while here. Back home, we hardly ever drank soda, for the same reason, because of money. We do here. If you want to, you buy it." These were really, really common things that people said. Another mom said, "I think it's because I go to the store every day here, so my kids ask me to buy them cookies. They say, buy cookies, buy snacks. And so that's why we buy more here. I used to go once a week in Mexico, so I'd only buy them that stuff once a week. We wouldn't go to the store every day." And I have one more. "I think that the food in Mexico is more delicious. The types? What can I say? There are a lot of things we eat in Mexico. But in my way of thinking, I think the food in Mexico is tastier. You find a lot of frozen foods here. I think food has more chemicals here, like meat, for example. In Mexico, you buy when they have just killed the cow and all that. Here, it's put in freezers. Maybe they use more chemicals in the food here. And this theme of freshness was something that almost everybody talked about, the difference between picking your vegetables out that same day versus buying things frozen and processed in the grocery stores here in the U.S. And there has been some research on this topic of immigration and change in diet, and some people have found that it only takes one generation for people to change from their native diets to one in the U.S. So when we take a step back, this research has helped identify some of the individual and family level influences on children's diet. We have things like the child's preference, family members' influence, habits and traditions, like buying a sweet for the kid every time you go to the store, something like that can change when you come here. And also we've identified structural influences, work schedules and child care, family demands, food availability, financial limitations, and outside influences like education. And so I thought it would be helpful to sort of put this on a framework and see all these different factors laid out. So here is the conceptual models, the Susan Fisher Owens conceptual model of oral health, and you can see that there's factors sort of at all these different levels spread out, influences on diet behavior coming from lots of different places. I thought it would be helpful to think about how this data might help inform future intervention. What can we learn from it, and how can it help us improve our future efforts? I think we can do a better job identifying and educating about cariogenic foods and drinks beyond candy and soda. People clearly knew that those were influences, but looking at how to help them learn how to identify, maybe using food labels or maybe using other rules of thumb to help them realize where else is sugar and fermentable carbohydrates. Do a better job explaining the caries process and emphasizing frequency of ingestion. I think a lot of the knowledge that parents had may have also come from obesity messaging they may have gotten somewhere else, but this issue of frequency versus volume is something that's slightly more unique to oral health things, so maybe something that we need to be a little bit more aware of in teaching parents and families about their children's oral health and diet. And the structural issues that we identified are more complex to address, but they give us added reasons to focus on upstream determinants of health. These have a potential to affect multiple dietary influences and health outcomes beyond oral health, such as obesity. And I want to take a minute to thank all the people that helped us with this project, including Anna and Aaron and Judy, who helped do data collection and coding, and my co-authors, Claudia Guerra and Judith Barker, who were very helpful in forming this presentation. And I'd like to thank the funders and IDC.
Thanks, Kristen. Everybody's really staying on time here today. So I think we also have time for one question for Kristen. If anybody has one? Yes.
Yeah.
So the first question was about cost and sort of the relative cost of things like soda in Mexico versus here and also fruits. And that was not something that we looked at in depth or in any sort of systematic way, but cost was something that definitely came up, both in terms of the function of the cost of a soda in Mexico and also the function of making more income here. And so I think sort of both of those factors are at play. I didn't end up keeping this quote in, but there was a woman who talked about how you can get a hamburger for $1 and the fries are free, and how it's just the food's just easier and everywhere here. And I think a lot of the parents that we talked to lived in rural settings in Mexico, and so I think their access, their relationship with how you purchase food and how you get food, whether it's grown or your neighbor has it and they have extra whatever. It's sort of a whole different approach to how you get food, but I do think that those prices would be something that would be interesting to look at in a systematic way. And then the other question he asked was about this concept of substituting juice for fruit, and this idea of you don't need to give whole fruit if you can give juice. And that was something that we didn't look into a whole lot, but I think would be interesting to look at. Juice is one of those things that at the time that we were doing these interviews, juice was just starting to get sort of a worse reputation. And so I think it's something that is worth tracking more closely and seeing how that is over time. There was really mixed. Some parents thought that juice was full of sugar and really bad, and other people thought that juice was healthy and something that was good for them to give their kids. It was really one of the most mixed topics in terms of parents' perspectives.